Hallmarkables! Welcome to the Hallmarkies podcast, Deliver Me a Podcast. I am Cammie Clements. If you're watching on YouTube, no, my name is not Rachel Wagner all of a sudden. I am filling in, and I am Cammie Clements, the hooked hearty when I do when calls the heart, and I am joined by the lovely and very talented Jess.
Well, thank you for that introduction. Hello, everybody.
We are missing our wonderful co-host, Casey. She had to go take care of her kids. So we miss her, we love her, and hope that she'll join us on the next one. All right, so today, take a deep breath because you're gonna need it.
And have the tissues handy.
Okay, we are going over Signed, Sealed, Delivered, episode 2 of the series, To Whom It May Concern. Okay. Jess and I just watched this last night, the night before this recording, and we were both crying. Gonna say it right now, we were both crying, so
as every postable does when watching this very touching episode.
You know, this I have to say that in the concise form, the show did pretty darn well. I like the movies better because they're able to take more time and explore more ideas, but for being a 1 hour show, it's pretty darn good for them to get all of that intrigue and all, because they're doing separate stories. The storyline with the four postables continues, but it's a different story of a different letter each time. And so that, I think, is just amazing that they're able to get in and pack in so much story and so much emotion into one episode. So this has to be my favorite I don't know. I don't know if I can pick a favorite episode.
There are no favorites.
I'm trying. That needs to be another podcast, Jess. We need to rank our episodes of Signed, Sealed, Delivered. Let's see how much of a challenge that would be.
Just have to roll a dice, like, okay, just randomly pick them, because you can make a case for half of them.
One in a million, roll the dice. That fits, right? One in a million? Roll the dice. Okay, it gets number 7. Anyway, so let's start with the very, very first shot of that scarf floating through the air with the Middle Eastern music in the background. I mean, right away, I don't know about you, Jess, but that caught my attention immediately. That's like, who killed him as the first line of a book? You know, just that was incredibly intriguing, incredibly emotional for a 3-second shot.
Yeah, and I would definitely agree. That's kind of like what you're saying about, you know, packing so much into a short time window for an episode, but they really utilize the music and just kind of, I don't know what the proper film term is, but how they use their shots to create those emotions and to really make it authentic, because this could have come across really, but to really make it feel authentic and real, that using all of that is kind of what made it be like that, you know, for us as the viewers.
Do you think that you were thinking maybe it could have come across as forced if it hadn't been done right?
Maybe, yeah.
So that is definitely, I think every postable out there will agree that this did not come across as force. Okay, so we have a beautiful young girl tossing and turning in her sleep, and she's having a nightmare. And you hear a male voice shouting, "Sammy, Sammy!" You see the scarf flying through the air. You see a hand reach out, and then she's startled awake, and she just has this look of horror on her face. And and then you see her look out the window to a man and a young boy loading up a van, or I don't know what kind of car it was, but loading up a car. And the young boy says, when I go to college, I'm only taking my backpack. So you assume that this girl is going off to college. And then you see her put a letter in an envelope. And just, this is such a small detail, but the care that she takes to put every single component inside, she clips it together, she writes out the letter, she kind of holds the card, and then she peels off the adhesive strip. I mean, just everything is done so deliberately.
It's almost, there's like a reverence to her process as she's packaging it up.
Yes, absolutely. And then, of course, we see her take down a sock. We have no idea why she is taking down a sock from her little cork board, but obviously it's important.
Yes. And again, we are intrigued already. We have some mysterious elements, and we have no idea what's really going on, but we're interested.
I heard Kristen say in an interview once that Martha's writing is so good that just when Kristen feels herself getting emotional, it says in the script, Shane becomes emotional. You know, and I am a very visual person, and so I work so much better with images than I do with written words. And so reading a script, I mean, I've done it a million times. I've been in a lot of plays, but reading a script can be so bland. And then you see it on the stage with the actor. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Yeah. Or if you're the actor doing the scene, then you start to block it and get the feel for it and say, oh, okay. Okay. But for her to be that good at her writing, I would love to get a hand on one of those scripts.
Right?
All right. So now we are in Colorado, and we see a very, very tall bear.
And this bear is not just random. It will reappear throughout the episodes and movies.
It's true. It's true. Apparently somebody tried. It just goes to show you what some people try to put through the veil. Somebody tried to put a stuffed grizzly bear, an actual stuffed grizzly bear.
Like life size,
Life size.
Not a toy.
Not a toy. Through the mail.
It almost makes me wonder if Martha got that from a real life event, or if she just really had a great imagination and wanted to put a bear in there. But I wonder, like, has someone actually tried to do that?
Or is her husband a hunter or something like that? And she said, oh, this would be funny. You know,
let's mail a bear. Put a bunch of stamps on it.
Is her nephew a taxidermist as a hobby? You know? But I love what Teresa says, because this Teresa is the supervisor for two episodes, which, mm-hmm. you know, Daphne Zuniga, Andrea, that was her name.
Yes.
She did not cross over. And so it was kind of cool that, she's not just moving along with the other storied cast. She is part of another episode as well. And so she says, one wayward bear is not going to affect your performance score. You know, don't beat yourself up, honey. You know.
Yes, because is it Oliver or everybody's getting their performance done for
Oliver? Just Oliver as a team leader. Okay, Jess, let's talk about just that aspect for a second. You know, Oliver as a team leader and his evaluations. Mm-hmm. Number one, anybody who gets a 95 and it haunts him. You gotta wonder about that.
I'm having
high
school flashbacks. High school flashbacks.
What, you got a 94 and it haunted you?
It did. I was.
Oh my gosh! I was kidding. You're serious.
I think it might have been a 92, but whatever.
Oh my god!
This is the life of a Type A person. Apparently.
Okay, so Oliver Oliver is taking these to new heights and has a grown adult, you know, that a 95 on an evaluation is awesome. Still haunting him, you know. But of course we know that he gets 98s and all of that. And so then, you know, Teresa going around taking all of her evaluations and the team trying to cover for him, you know, Shane walking in and, Oliver, can I have a word with you, you know, just kind of trails off, and then you're going to get that done, you are in the middle of getting that completed, aren't you, Miss McInerney? Naturally. and then Rita saying that when Teresa was saying, whose fridge is this? Is it Oliver's or is it the group's? And it's Oliver's.
Oh, yeah.
And Norman kind of gives her the look that he shares with
all
the
of
group.
Us. You know?
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pie: People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
And then Oliver's nervousness when he sees Teresa, like, you're here again. that doesn't seem like something Oliver would say. That seems like something Shane would say.
Yeah.
Norman has recently been tasked with creating a, you know, he's totally totally making this up as he goes along. And Shane is totally following suit. Have laptop, will travel.
Yes.
I mean, for all the cynicism and sarcasm that Shane protrudes from her aura, if you will, you know, all of that that she does, she doesn't want to see Oliver fail. She mm-hmm. knows how much it means to him that he doesn't. And she wants him to get a good score, and she doesn't want to get him in trouble. And mm-hmm. And then, speaking of cynicism, she goes straight to blackmail. she goes straight to blackmail with, I do a lot of work in the field. As a matter of fact, there's something that I have to do now, and I'm just so new at it, I don't think I can do it
alone. Are you coming, Oliver?
You can see him seething, but he's not.
But he can't do anything about it.
Anything. That is when red wine and clams would have come in really. Oysters? Is it Is it no, oysters?
I think it's clams. I thought it was
okay,
clams.
I was right the first time.
Don't doubt yourself, Cammy. You got this.
I got this. But yeah, this is when red wine and clams would have come in really, really handy for Oliver because he was mad. And then, of course, Oliver gets the highest score ever on an evaluation performance, which is 100%. And of course, Teresa was the one to give it to him, you know, because she's pursuing a dream of her own. She wants to see him excel. And she wants to leave on a good note because, as we know, this is her last episode. Mm-hmm. And so she wants to leave on a happy note. Okay, so, you know, she's pursuing the dream all the way to community theater.
Yes.
Because the mayor of Munchkinville may get jury duty. We're having a lot of run-ins with jury duty. We had it just the other week with When Calls the Heart. There was a whole jury duty involved, and now we're recapping something that involves jury duty again. You know. But yes, we find out that Teresa is an understudy for Wizard of Oz at a community theater, and she really wants to pursue that dream of acting in a small way. She's starting out. And finally she leaves and everybody just kind of drops the stance. the facade. Everybody drops the stance and they pull out another letter, and Shane just goes, "Oh, can we please not do this now? We worked through lunch and I'm hungry." And you know, I'm thinking that Shane's a little hangry at this moment.
Yes. I would agree, especially considering the events that follow.
she's hangry.
And I'm really surprised here that Oliver doesn't, I don't remember him protesting at all, because usually he doesn't like to take the mail out of the office. At least that was like a big thing, I think, in the first
pilot.
Yeah. So we see Oliver loosening up a little bit here too.
Yeah, but you know, I think he took pity on poor Shane because they worked through lunch, so they didn't get a lunch break. Mm-hmm. So, but we are not in the habit of ignoring miracles, are we, Rita? You know? And of course, the miracle is that there's this mangled envelope with no address that. The address has been completely torn, and the letter and the personal card have not fallen out, which, yeah, I'll agree, that's a bit of a miracle.
Yes.
So we see them at the Mailbox Grill getting dinner and discussing what's going on. They take out the "To Whom It May Concern" letter. Meanwhile, Shane is concocting a science experiment.
Yes, I have never heard of half of those ingredients go on a salad. Like, maybe it's where I'm from, but Tabasco sauce, I've never heard of that on a salad.
I mean, and how do you
salsa?
How do you do Tabasco sauce and salsa?
Like, does that
Tabasco sauce and salsa on a salad?
Are either one of those normal? I have never heard of anything that could go on a salad.
Girl, I'm a Texan, and putting both of those things on a salad is not normal. You know?
Yes. So I would definitely agree that it's a science experiment. It sounds like when I was a kid, we used to do that with some of my friends. We would just like find random ingredients and try to make a meal out of it. So it sounds almost like
that's what my friends and I would do. Is we would call it a secret recipe.
Yeah.
We would throw all kinds of stuff, not necessarily an eating recipe, but we would just throw all kinds of stuff together and then see what it did, you know.
Yeah.
I have to say one thing right here. You know, Shane offers to take the card and process it in the morning. And Oliver says, not on your tin type, Miss McInerney. No, please step away from the salad. You know, I had to look up what a tin type was. And even Norman, Mr. Vocabulary Guru over there and Odd Facts Man, didn't know what a tin type was. And Rita says, I'll tell you later. And I was kind of sad that they didn't go back to that, because tintype is a photo that the image has been transferred, I guess, onto a piece of tin. So basically it's a photograph on a piece of tin.
Oh,
and it's okay. The process of doing that or something like that. And I said, what does that have to do with a military, with a military form? I mean, what are your thoughts on tintype, Jess?
I don't know, because I feel like I've looked it up before too, and I wonder, is there maybe more like an Urban Dictionary type definition of it, where it like kind of alludes to something else and not like a formal definition, maybe?
If it does, I have no idea. So, Postables, if you have any insight whatsoever into why the heck did Oliver say that, please let us know.
Yes, please enlighten us. We're a bit confused.
I have no idea where that line came from. I don't know what it has to do with the situation at hand, and I have no idea why Oliver said that. You know, just. Yeah, no, and then I have no idea why Rita had this feeling that she had to tell Norman later, you know.
Yeah, that's what makes you think it maybe is alluding to something else.
Yes, that's the thing. I was like, were we supposed to remember that, you know?
Okay, I'm looking it up on Urban Dictionary.
Oh, gosh.
Okay, wait, can you use it in the sentence again?
Okay, what he said. So Shane says, I'm going to process this in the morning, but he doesn't trust her with it because he knows that she's going to break protocol. Mm-hmm. And so he goes, not on your tin type, Miss McInerney. Now please step away from the salad.
Okay. I'm not sure this makes sense with that, but according to Urban Dictionary, tin type is a term used to describe men out there who are completely drop dead gorgeous.
What?
So I don't know. That doesn't sound right either.
Shane had never seen a picture of Buzz. She has no idea.
I don't know. Maybe it's someone who's really, I don't know.
Okay, now I'm even more lost than I was before. Okay, so let's talk about that card. Okay, and let's try not to cry. I'm already crying. All right, so we meet Sammy, Samila, and her American friend, Buzz. And Buzz was the one who gave her the nickname Sammy, which I think is so endearing.
That's exactly what I was just going to say. Endearing is the word I was thinking of.
Great minds. Great minds. It's so endearing. It's what a big brother would do for his little sister. That is something that a big brother would do for his little mm-hmm. sister. And for him to take her in so completely and just be so kind to her was so, so sweet. So we see Buzz get a package from his mother, and I love that his buddy Cam says, any good movies? I'm like, well, Mission Impossible 1, Mission Impossible 2, and, which are really old, even for then. He went in what, 2006, 2005, something?
That's sounds when he about went right.
To the service. Yeah, and Mission Impossible 1 was in 97, You know, so that's, it was a while ago, even for then, you know. So I thought that was an interesting choice to for his mom to send old movies for even back then.
Yeah.
And then socks that are too small and a pillowcase.
We can have the comforts of home, a pillowcase.
This mom is obviously a bit of a doter, like moms are supposed to be. You don't hear about her having any other children, and her son is overseas, so of course she wants to send him a care package, with that, which I think is wonderful. I just have to wonder about her choices. are you telling, because Buzz says to Sammy, she always makes them too small. Is she just not that good at knitting? Or did she want him to give them away? Or is she...
She doesn't realize he's a growing boy and he needs bigger socks.
And then I think the idea of a pillowcase is sweet. Maybe it's the only thing she could send because a pillow was too big, you know. Yeah. I mean, just, but why a pillowcase?
Or maybe she assumes he already has a pillow and wants him to have the case to protect it and keep it clean.
Right. Well, and I love what Cam said, now if only we had pillows, you know.
Yeah.
And then Buzz says, oh, brownies, and he gets the brownies, which obviously are a big thing with him because he doesn't sound surprised. He said, oh yes, they're here. And how sweet that immediately he starts sharing with mm-hmm. all the kids.
Yes.
You know, he does not hoard them. He does not say, sorry guys, nothing for you today. He immediately starts passing them out. Mm-hmm. And how sweet that she sent him with such a boatload of brownies.
Yes.
I mean, they're small enough so you can do it, but just, you know, wow, what a mom, what a son. You know, they both just really made an impression on me right there. And then we see that we hear Sammy writing the letter as we watch, and we see a young Sammy who is a lot more curious than the other kids, than her friends. Mm-hmm. And because everybody else runs away and she moves closer.
She's braver. More, mm-hmm. Yeah, more curious, like you said.
Uh-huh. And Buzz gives her the socks. And even when Cam says, hey, man, you gotta be careful. And then he said, I can't live like that. I just can't live like that. And then Sammy brings back her father's hat in exchange. I mean, when you think about how little this little girl has, we hear at the end in her valedictorian speech that she was trading shells. She was trading bullet shells for food.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And she also said in the note right there that the hat was her father's and it was all she had left of him. But she trades it because that is her code and she would never take something without giving something back.
Mm-hmm. What a beautiful message that is for us as viewers in a world where we don't really do that. Like, where most people would just take and be like, oh, thanks, great. You know, we don't always think so much about giving back as we do receiving. And so it is really beautiful, especially to show it for a girl so young to be doing that as well.
Yeah, she was 12, right? I believe she was 12. I'm pretty sure that she was 12. And she has no family. She's an orphan. But she still upholds that dignity and that beautiful idea that mm-hmm. you do not just take something, you always give something back. And how gracious of Buzz to take it, because I mean, that's probably not his ideal trading, you know. I mean, he got rid of socks that didn't fit, but he's like, I've now got and a hat from Afghanistan. Woo! He puts it on.
He starts dancing around.
Just once again, just shows how good his heart is. Mm-hmm. And then we see that he has an even better heart, and we see him put that pillowcase to good use. And oh gosh, I'm gonna cry again.
Pull it together.
I'm trying. when they find her, when the postables find her, and she says, why are you doing this? It's just one letter. And Oliver says, in a world full of texts and tweets and abbreviated thought, so many, I'm not quoting it directly, but so many forget the gift of learning to read and write. I almost broke down right then and there, because how much are we taking for granted?
Absolutely.
Circumstances that we are in, even now in a time of crisis, we have online materials mm-hmm. that can help us keep teaching our children. We have CDs and song lists that have learning songs for our younger kids. We have TV shows that teach them how to count and their shapes and how to read. We have videos that teach kids other languages, for crying mm-hmm. out loud. You know, there are so many resources, and there are so many things that our circumstances give us, and so many blessings that we have, that we forget mm-hmm. the beautiful gift of merely learning how to speak English, mm-hmm. a language that is universal and helpful for anyone who can learn it, and learning how to read and write.
I absolutely loved that when he said that quote, because you're right. I mean, I think we forget, especially as Americans, that education for us is more of a right, but it's really a privilege, and we forget that. Huge. Because it has been given to us as a right. It's, you know, all children must go to school, and we forget that some places it's not like that, and you know, it can be just so beautiful that we had that gift to learn and to be able to speak and read and teach others and all that.
And then what did Sammy do with that gift? She didn't just keep it to herself. First, I mean, in every situation, she did what she could. First, mm-hmm. she gathered the children of the village, even when the parents weren't happy, even when she knew that the Taliban could possibly come in mm-hmm. and bomb the school. She set it up anyway. She had such a hunger and a thirst for learning that first she gathered the children of her village. And then when she's in the States, she goes to school and she goes to college. And then she's a student teacher and she teaches mm-hmm. other children that may not have the same opportunity, inner city children. And then she becomes valedictorian. The perseverance, I know she's a fictional character, but she reminds me of so many people that we hear about in history books that would not take no for an answer, that have that hunger to succeed and that hunger to thrive, and they do it despite all circumstances.
Mm-hmm. And it is too like a really great message about sharing our gifts, not just like physical gifts like she did with the hat, but sharing your gift of teaching or yes. of art or of working with your hands, you know, really being able to use your gifts to help other people. They're not just there for you to kind of enjoy by yourself, but you know, it's really important to share those with others. And I think she's a really great example of how, you know, it's something so simple as learning, and she took that and made it a beautiful gift for so many people. It was, yeah.
And then on top of all of that, she's humble.
Yes.
She said, he's the reason why I can do all of this. Yeah. she would not have gotten far if she hadn't had the driving spirit. But yes, Buzz did give her the tools, but she gives all the credit to him.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, so on top of all of those amazing characteristics, she's humble too. I mean, she doesn't say, oh, look where I've come. Look how far I got. She completely credits Buzz for everything. Okay, let's backtrack a little bit. Let's go back to the pillowcase.
Yes.
And F. F is for family. I'm okay. When she says, I don't anymore have family, and then she says, F is for friend.
Friend.
Okay?
So beautiful. You
know? And just how she is determined to not be sad. Mm-hmm. You know, she's determined how to not be sad. And then Buzz turns over the pillowcase and solidifies it. Okay, F is for friend. And he does and he writes down F equals friend.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the school does get bombed and everybody's running, that shot of her with that piece of pillowcase, because there was stuff in her eyes, and Buzz says, no, 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 don't open your eyes. And just him, okay, just, could you hold it together? Well, I was watching with you, but could you hold it together when he is screaming out, Sammy, Sammy? I mean, he is looking for her. I mean, yes, he's become close to her, but obviously he cares about her so much that he goes back for her. Yeah. And when he tries to pull her out and then she runs back, he's searching all over the place for her. And then he sees her and says, no, 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 don't open your eyes. Tears up that pillowcase, puts it over her eyes, and puts her in the chopper instead of him.
Yeah, and the reason he lost track of her was because she went back for that pillowcase, right? Because it was so important. That's what she was going back for. Yeah.
Yeah, he grabbed her. He grabbed her hand and went, and then she let go. She pulled away and went back for the pillowcase because she didn't. Once again, there's that hunger for learning. She did not want to lose that pillowcase. And then the bomb hit right by them, and both of them pass out. But just that final shot of her being carried away in the chopper with F equals friend on her eyes. Mm-hmm. And that's the last time she ever saw him or heard his voice up to that point, and she didn't think that she'd ever see him again. It just, oh my gosh, oh my gosh.
It's such a beautiful sacrifice on his part, because he, I'm trying to remember, was there not enough room on the plane for him to get onto?
There was not.
Yeah,
there was
so. Not.
There was room for one more, and he said, Cam, his friend, just you, Buzz, we're going. Like, no, 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 take her instead, I'm staying.
Yeah. And again, that theme of giving and sacrifice, it just continues throughout this whole episode, and we just see it time and time again, and it's so beautiful.
Oh my gosh, beautiful. It really, really is. And for Sammy to try so hard to find him, I mean, when we hear the letter to whom it may concern, I've done this, I've done this, I've done this, I've done this. You know, she has gone through every possible channel to find this man. Mm-hmm. And she was 18 when she wrote the letter, and she was 12 when she was taken to the States. And so she has spent 6 years trying to find this man who saved her life and changed her life.
Mm-hmm.
So I should probably say that the other way, who changed her life and then saved it so she could change others. Oh my gosh, I'm gonna cry again.
Telling you, have those tissues handy. They're very important.
So far, they're not streaming. So far, I'm keeping it contained to the sparkling eyes look, you know?
You're glistening.
I'm glistening. But so she has exhausted every possible thing that she can think of for 6 years. And she's finally trying one final effort, one final avenue that she hasn't thought of. And she's sending a letter directly to the army with the official government form to try to find, to try to find him. And then it gets lost in the mail. Oh, that poor girl. You know, she tried so hard to find him. And when she couldn't, what did she do, Jess? Where did she go? When she couldn't find him, where did she decide to go to college?
Oh, yeah. She went to, was it Colorado State?
Colorado Vista.
Vista.
Yeah. So she goes to school in Colorado so he can hopefully find her.
Because he was from that area.
Because he was from Colorado. He was from Colorado. Because that's what C was for, right? C yes. is for Colorado, place you from. And so when she has exhausted all of the possibilities and all of her resources, what does she do? She goes to the state, so hopefully he can find her. Just the impact that this man had on her is... I've said this in the Hardys podcast, but I haven't said it here. There is something so compelling to me about a bond that is that tight, that strong, that isn't romantic. You know, because they could have easily made her a little older, made her pretty, you know, and Buzz liked her, and there was a romantic attachment. Mm-hmm. Easily could have done it, and it would have been fine. You know, it totally would have been fine, and it still would have had a credible storyline and all that, but I think it almost means more. It almost means more that it wasn't romantic. And that it was still so strong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. Because we really undervalue those friendships today. And so to see that so highlighted was very good.
We jump straight to romance. We do. We jump straight. Oh, those two have to be together. Oh, those two have to be together. Oh, look, they're talking and looking each other in the eye. They're going to end up together.
Yeah. We jumped to that conclusion.
But it didn't happen here. It was a bond that was that strong without romance. And it made it more powerful to me. I loved watching it even more, even though I'm a hopeless romantic and I would have loved it if it had been romantic. I appreciated it more because it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's a good word for it. I appreciated it more.
And it really is a testament to Martha's writing, because even though it wasn't a romantic relationship, it was still just as interesting, just as compelling. Because, you know, something like that could get a little boring, but she made it, you really feel that connection and really like understand that bond that they had. And so
absolutely.
I think that really helped it out as well.
Okay, so let's talk about those brownies.
Pegs, practically perfect brownies.
But you know what? Those brownies led them to to Buzz, which, you know, you never know, right? You never know what's going to lead you to somebody. And just the fact that they had already sampled the brownies, the postables, the three of them. the fact that they had already sampled them, because there was a misdirected box that they said, and they had already talked to Buzz's mother. They knew who she was. And like, she said we should just eat the brownies and she would make a new order, which is so sweet. Goes back to awesome mother, awesome son, right?
Exactly. We see because it passing down the line.
And that's extra work for her, but she says, no, eat them, I'll make more. You know, it's just, I absolutely, it's the connections. Once again, Martha, we love your writing because
love your weaving of all the components.
We love your weaving. We love your weaving. Because once again, the connection, that everything just intertwines. It just, it's beautiful. It's beautiful the way it happens. And we find out that Buzz has disappeared. He was MIA, but then he did make it home. Mm-hmm. But then he has taken off. The PTSD and the guilt, the survivor's guilt, has just become too much for him. So much so that he even left his purple heart on his hospital bed. It just, that, you know, I mean, most soldiers, that's what they work for. You're like, oh, this is going to get me a purple heart. Not in that attitude, but when they receive a purple heart, they most of the time are very, very humble, just saying, I was just doing my job. Mm-hmm. But that's, you know, that's the Stanley Cup of hockey. That's the gold medal of the Olympics. Right. Only the stakes are much higher because you save lives.
Right.
You know? So it's an incredible thing to be awarded. And he left it on his hospital bed. So what nightmare is he going through in his head?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just comments on that, Jess?
No, I totally agree. Yeah, it's, again, it shows his selflessness, his humility, because he doesn't feel that he deserves it, which clearly we know that he does deserve it, but he feels guilty for teaching her because it ended up with the school getting bombed and
I made her a target.
Yeah, yeah. Even though she did survive. I don't know if they mentioned if anyone actually died that day, but
The captain says that the firefight was classified. I don't know if they're talking about that firefight or something else, but the firefight is classified. So if they are talking about that, he said that the casualties were military and civilian.
Okay, so people did die, he was holding on to that guilt and felt like he didn't deserve it, but yeah.
And the state that he's in when we see him.
Yes.
I do have to admit, I was a little confused, and I blame time on this because we didn't have enough time to delve deeper because it was only a 1-hour episode.
Mm-hmm.
But I was a little confused about the connection, about how they found him so quickly through that vet pastor. My guess is that the captain knew the name of Benjamin Parker because he didn't know Buzz. He didn't know the name Buzz, but after he heard the name Benjamin Parker, then he said, well, I have a buddy who's a pastor who runs a service for vets. And then Shane and Oliver are there. Boom. He's there working a shift. What? So I blame time because they didn't have the opportunity to delve more deeply into that, but that is one concession I will make. I was confused.
Also, how we were discussing, he didn't respond to his name until they said Buzz, right? Because they called Mr. Parker,
Benjamin, Buzz. We didn't talk about this on the podcast, in case anybody's wondering. We said it when we were watching. Like, why is he not responding to the other two names?
Right, unless he was so zoned out, and it took that personal, unique name from Sammy to kind of jolt him, like, oh, you know, like, out of his, like, I don't know what the word
is. Or because his army buddies called him that, too, and so... Okay. But his mom said that he never mentioned them after he got home. So I'm wondering if he just hadn't heard it in that long.
And it startled him.
Yeah. What? Yeah. So Yeah, that's my only guess, is that he was so zoned out. And I mean, it's like the telephone ringing. If you are really in the zone and you're just not paying attention, it takes until the third ring for you to hear it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, and so, oh, right, phone, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's my only guess, is that he was, like you said, so in the zone. And boy, is he a state.
Yes, he is not the same Buzz we saw earlier in the movie. He's got the long hair and beard, very scruffy looking. Yeah.
It's almost scary how altered he is. And then, once again, Oliver, king of speeches, he gives the speech that turns Buzz around. And I'm sorry, Postables, I can't quote it word for word, but you have access to it. Go watch it.
And bring the tissues.
Yeah. But just once again, Oliver's ability to be so empathetic. He's never served in the military. He doesn't know anything about that world. And yet he zones in and tells him, what did you do? You served your country. You taught a little girl who had no hope for anything to read. You have done nothing to be ashamed of. What could you possibly have done that makes you think you don't deserve a night in your own bed or a purple heart? And just,
yeah.
Oliver, you're great, man. You were made for speeches.
Got away with the words, for sure. It's, yeah.
So then we go back to the DLO and we find out that Teresa got Glinda the Good Witch.
She's getting on the stage.
And Shane says, we've got a problem. There are no problems, only opportunities in disguise. Well, this one's in disguise.
I know, it was so great.
That, I mean, just the banter. You've got the beautiful sentiment. You've got the beautiful one-liner. That should be your next painting, Jess. Is there are no problems, only opportunities in disguise, or something like
well,
that.
This you one's know. In disguise.
Yeah. So, but that should be your next painting. So you've got the big profound one-liner, and then you've got the levity with the bantering.
You've got the wittiness, right, kind of balancing
right
it
after
out.
After it. Martha, you're incredible. Kristen, you're incredible. You know, Valerie, may you rest in peace. You were incredible.
Yes.
You know, so this is Buzz, and she needs to be ready. He needs to be ready for Samila's graduation in 3 hours.
Yes.
And instead of going, Teresa just says, no problem, and immediately takes charge of the situation. And so just, okay, Shane, you do this. Oliver, you do this. Rita, you do this. Norman, you can keep us company. Which, you know, once again, Norman in his quirkiness and his ever wandering and scattered thought, he thinks of the brownies. Instead of just sitting there like the good little puppy dog that he is sometimes, you know, he pulls out the brownies and says, are you hungry? That
yes.
Giving Buzz that immediate connection with mm-hmm. his mother that he hasn't had in, I don't know how long, was it a year? Had he been gone for a year from his
mom? I would
mom?
Think at least a year, yeah.
Something like that, because he called, or maybe, I don't remember, because he called on her birthday. But mm-hmm. but it was way before that he hadn't seen her. So, but he instantly has that connection with his mom.
Yeah.
And then we see him show up.
Oh, and gosh. The big finale here.
We see him show up to the graduation looking as handsome as ever, just like he was. We find out that Sammy is valedictorian. And what did we say when we were watching, Jess? Of course she is.
Yes. You know?
Of course she is.
She was taught by the best.
Yes, indeed she was. And so then she gives, I mean, okay, this girl got a lesson or two from Oliver.
Yes, that speech.
That she, this, it's a formal speech, yes, but that girl could give a speech.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've been a teacher for a lot of my life. I love visuals. And the fact that she was not afraid to look ridiculous for a minute, to put that sock on.
The red sock to go with her blue gown.
The red sock to go with her graduation gown and her nylons, you know. for her to be that comfortable with it and want to share that story so much, it goes back to how humble she is, that mm-hmm. she did not forget her beginnings. She did mm-hmm. not forget where she came from. She did not forget the man who made it all possible for her. And mm-hmm. oh boy, oh boy, yeah. Oh boy.
And just like you said, the way she delivers the speech, I used to be on speech team way back when. It can mm-hmm. be really, it's not so easy to deliver a speech the right way.
No.
So she really used her voice to kind of gather that momentum and really make it profound. She could have just, you know, said it very, told her story, whatever, but she kind of increased the intensity with the way she used her voice, her inflections, how she pauses and all of that. And she just such a, the actress did such a wonderful job of bringing that story to life in her speech.
Amen. Amen. Yes, absolutely. And how she looks at her family, because of him, I have two parents to love me. I was like, she got adopted, you know, she got adopted into a loving family. And so then she's talking about the future. Today is a beginning for all of us, but we must never forget. And then some we may never see again, with no idea that he is standing right there, but all of them we will love forever, you know. And then this is the moment where I can't hold it in any longer. She breaks away. She cannot, she just runs to him. There is no shock, there's shock. But once she sees that it is actually him, there's no slow moving. She bolts.
She runs.
She bolts and she just jumps off that stage and she throws herself into his arms. The hat fell off. She didn't care. You know? Oh my gosh. And going back to the fact that this was more profound because it wasn't romantic. There was no romance in that moment, but you could not have pried them off one another for anything. And just how beautiful is that, to have that kind of a relationship with somebody that means so much to you, that when you see them, you run, and the thought that you may never see them again brings you to tears.
Oh, I'm tearing up again.
Sorry. I'm sorry.
Well, you guys. Okay. We're okay. We're just.
We're good.
But yeah.
And then he says, I should get going. I don't want to barge in on your family time. And she just grabs his hand. F is for family.
Family. And it comes full circle. And it's, yeah. One thing I really love too about this episode is it really shows something good that can come out of a wartime, or even yes. really any time of crisis. You know, we think of all the bad that happens in war.
Oh my gosh, that is such a good point. Yes, please keep going, but I never even thought of that. Please keep going. Go.
Yeah, the good from wartime, or even like the situation we're in now, we're in a state of crisis, and you know, most of what you're going to hear is person got killed, or people are stealing, you know, all the supplies and resources. And this really highlights the good that can come out of a time like that, because those are times when we should come together and help one another. And it's just such a beautiful way of showing that, especially in wartime. We don't think of good things happening when we're at war with other countries. And this really shows that any opportunity can be that opportunity to change someone's life. Yeah.
Jess, you're brilliant.
Thank you.
That is so profound. I never would have even thought of it that way. All right. So we're going to finish up with a little levity. Get rid of these tears.
Yeah.
So first of all, for any Hardys / postables out there, there are two crossovers. We have Michael Hogan, who just recently starred as Nathan Grant's father. He was the captain. And then we have Anne-Marie DeLuise. She played Aunt Caroline for Becky and Cody, and she was Sammy's adopted mother. So that's two When Calls the Heart connections for you. So now I can really officially, I mean, because with one actor who didn't even really say anything, it was kind of edgy, but now I got two, so I can totally cover it for the blog. Woo! All right. So, Jess, are you ready for my trivia?
I'm ready. I probably won't get them, but I'm ready.
Number one. What was the rank and name of the officer who helped them in the office?
I definitely don't know his name. Was it a sergeant of some sort?
Man, I even said it in the podcast. You must not have been listening.
I was tuning you out. It's too much emotions going on, Cammie.
Captain Hopper.
Captain Hopper, okay.
Captain Hopper.
Telling you, I'm really bad at trivia. I tried to pay attention.
Okay, number two.
Okay.
E is for...
Oh, I should know that. If you would ask me A, I know A.
I'm not going to tell you A.
No, it's like, I know A. I don't remember E.
A is way too obvious. That's why it's called trivia.
E is for... Elephant. I don't know.
Eagle.
Hey, I wasn't an animal. I was kind of close.
It's a bird and a... No, sorry. No.
They're both animals, so I'm going to say that I was close.
Okay. That's the elephant in the room. Okay. Where in the States did Sammy live? Number three.
Before she went to college. Was it West
she
Coast?
She said it. She said it. No, I'm not telling you.
I'm terrible. California?
Seattle, Washington.
Hey, it was kind of close again.
Oh my gosh. You were two states away.
Oh, it's not like I said Maine.
Postables, did we give it? No, never mind. No, we don't give it to her. You're 0 for 3, darling. You're 0
I know.
For 3.
I feel like you got to give me an easy one.
No. Well, that's all I got. So.
Oh, well.
All right. We have so enjoyed recapping this. Please, humor us with our emotions. We hope that you come back. We're not always crying messes. It's just this wonderful show and the emotions that it evokes. So all of you who work on this to bring it to us, we love you. You are amazing. Jess, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at JMBosse. It's B-O-S-S-E 77. I'm also on Instagram at JessBSWBlog, or you can check out my website, beneathstillwaters.com.
All right, and you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Cammie Drama Girl, Cammie spelled K-A-M-I. On Facebook, I have the Hooked Hardy Facebook page, and my blog is hookedhardy.com. You can also follow the Hallmarkies podcast everywhere on social media. On Twitter, it's Hallmarkies Pod, and on Instagram, it's Hallmarkies Podcast. If you're listening on iTunes, we would love your reviews and your comments. And if you're watching on YouTube, which is so much more fun, I'm just kidding. But if you're watching on YouTube, please give us a thumbs up and leave your comments. We love them. And we will see you next time with Soulmates. So yes. Bye, everybody.
Bye.